he thought back about his life. He'd always been an otherworldly man. From the moment he'd graduated from the University of Michigan in the summer of 1932 with an engineering degree, to the day he retired, he'd been fascinated with psychology and especially parapsychology. He knew that the part of the human being that can be seen and touched is but the tip of the iceberg, that man's basic nature lies beyond the physical world, beyond the scope of the five senses. By the time he was 60, he'd become a successful entrepreneur, inventor and globetrotter with a number of patents to his name. But in 1970, he decided to retire in order to pursue his lifelong dream of learning all he could about man's basic nature. He had always been driven by a deep inner urge to figure out what makes things, and especially people, tick. With ample savings after his retirement, George traveled extensively with Jeanette, visiting healers, inventors and researchers in dozens of countries. He had a freewheeling way with his life savings. He gave money to struggling researchers and mediums, and he invited scientists, doctors and other experts along on many of his travels, paying all their expenses. Jeanette had been born with the name Mary Jeanette Duncan, and she inherited all the thrift that her Scottish surname suggested. Jeanette Duncan meek loved and needed security in her marriage. Sometimes, her frugality and her husband's generosity would rub up against each other, and there would be tension, a tension that seemed to provide a driving force for their marriage. Like yin and yang, or like shock absorbers and springs on a car, the meek's opposite natures had a stabilizing influence on the marriage. George and Jeanette settled in Fort Myers, Florida, which quickly became her favorite place in the world. They had a lot of friends there. They owned a large houseboat and, maybe best of all, Jeanette could enjoy a refreshing swim every morning before breakfast. Some of their best years together were spent in Fort Myers. Then they moved to North Carolina, and things were never quite the same for Jeanette. She had enjoyed a long swim every morning at their old home, but now there was nowhere to swim. They'd enjoyed close friendships among the vibrant Floridians. But making friends with the homespun, deeply rooted Smoky Hills folks took a great deal more time and effort. Jeanette loved George as much as ever, and she always seemed to sense that their love alone could get them through anything. But still, a small part of her couldn't seem to come to grips with their new life. They took occasional trips to Florida to visit friends, and with every passing year, the return drive became more and more difficult for Jeanette. She tried to keep this little part of her tucked quietly inside, but apparently it was much stronger than she realized. On the way home from one visit in 1989, Jeanette suffered a massive stroke in the car. In the spring of 1989, after a series of strokes, Jeanette lay on her deathbed. One part of her, the spiritual part, was ready for the new adventure about to begin, while her more down-to-earth part felt reluctant to leave George. Now, blind in one eye, and unable to speak or move, she discovered she could communicate with George telepathically through their psychically gifted housekeeper, Lori, who was a natural medium. For months, George activated a tape recorder next to Jeanette's bed, and the two shared their innermost thoughts and feelings through Lori. They both knew Jeanette would make her transition soon, and that George would follow a few years later. They knew that they would then have a wonderful reunion in the spirit world. All of the research George had done during his life, his many meetings with parapsychologists and scientists working with spirit communication, had convinced him that he would be with her again. Together, from their new home, a step or two closer to God, they would continue to help people still on earth to find their spiritual way. On the day before Jeanette's passage, George asked her to get firmly in mind two names, Time Estream and Swegensalter. He explained that Time Estream was the name of a spirit world sending station whose staff of over 1,000 spirit beings were quickly mastering the art of sending long messages and clear video images to their colleagues on Earth through televisions, radios, computers, faxes, and telephones. Swegensalter was the young woman who was the project leader at Time Estream. 2 decades of spiritual research told George that the two names, planted in Jeanette's mind, would act as a homing signal to pull Jeanette's spirit to the Time Stream sending station. The next day, in April of 1990, Jeanette died. George grieved at the loss of his sweetheart, but he waited patiently. Finally, his patience was rewarded. 3 months after Jeanette's death, George received a letter from her which had been sent to settle in Luxembourg from Time Stream. When Maggie and Jules discovered it on their computer's hard drive, they printed it on their printer and forwarded it to George in North Carolina. Jeanette, having worked with George over many years, and knowing his scientific mind, gave proofs of things only she and George knew. Dear GW, well, it seems there are still people who do not believe in the contacts your friends here in Luxembourg are having. Hence, I will give you some personal details known only to you and Molly. First story. In 1987, end of April, our tenant Debbie called to say her refrigerator was off. It must have been on a Thursday morning. Second story. On April 29, 1987, Anne Valentin wrote a letter from California saying she had not received the Magic of Living booklets she had ordered, but instead had received a box of Harlequin novels. Third story. John Lathrop shut off the electricity at our rental house to put in the new yard light. He wasn't down there very long but charged $20 service in addition to $40 for the bulbs, plus tax. The charge seemed high. Don't try to explain this, honey. My never-ending love to you. I miss you so much, but I know we will be together. Love forever, Jeanette Duncan Meek. To validate the contact, Jeanette had selected 3 items known only to the Meeks and their assistant Molly Fillow. The second item about romance novels, in fact, was a puzzle even to George. He had to call his old friend, Anne Valentin, to verify it. Of course, it checked out. Anne had received a box of Harlequin novels instead of the booklets she'd ordered. George remembered, too, the incident about John Lathrop. It had irked both him and Jeanette. Meanwhile, Jeanette quickly settled into her new home. She took on a new assignment of receiving and comforting victims of the Persian Gulf crisis and helping them adjust. She learned from the light beings in the next dimension how to advance to higher spiritual dimensions, and she made new friends, including ragtime composer Scott Joplin. Then in November 1992, the Luxembourg researchers received a computer scanned image from their spirit colleagues, which was accompanied by the following computer text: "Hello, my name is Hal Roach, and I am more than 100 years old. I am at present a member of the artistic team of Time Stream and am working together with old friends like George Cukor and others in the group of Klaus Schreiber and Eli Schaefer. This picture shows you a glimpse at the fourth level, astral dimension, as we see it. You can see Jeanette Meek and Nancy Carroll coming through a dispassing point in our level. Well, that should be enough for you folks for today. I am eager to learn more about this new world I'm living in now." Hal Roach had been a well-known producer of such television series as Argank Comedy. Nancy Carroll, the young lady in a dark dress who appears next to Jeanette's face, astonished George. This was his daughter who had died at the age of 2 weeks. She was now a beautiful young woman. See plate 20. In the many dialogues across dimensions, Jeanette told George how their daughter had grown quickly from infancy to young adulthood in the spirit world. "I, Mark Macy, have stayed in contact with Jeanette Meek as well. I often work with a gifted medium, Jean Peterson." In the summer of 1993, George and I asked Jean to channel information from Jeanette. The contact gave us much insight on her new life in spirit. Jeanette had been a warm, folksy woman, and still was in her new life as her own words reveal. "Mark, as I understand it, Jeanette, you have befriended Scott Joplin, black American composer." Jeanette: "Yes, we've been making a bit of music together, but don't tell George." "I'm only kidding, honey." Mark chuckles: "Is he still involved in music in the plane where he is now?" Jeanette: "Yes. Music being a universal language, music is in one's soul, an experience that continues." Mark: From what I've discussed with George, you've been involved quite a bit with the spiritual hierarchy, and also you've had some brief meetings with Time Stream. Can you tell me something about the group, and the occasion on which you transmitted your picture and computer letter? Jeanette, well, it's a matter of what you'd call working with energy and manipulating, controlling and directing energy in such a way that it aligns with wherever the energy is that you're sending. It does no good if one wants to send a thought in your world to Moscow if someone is unable to receive the thought by mental telepathy. So you have another method of getting the message through. You can write, or you can have a friend who's traveling to deliver the message to a person on that end, or you can use the telephone. It's a matter of understanding what you want to accomplish and how to do it. Now I know how to send thoughts telepathically to your dimension from where I am. It's a matter of reception on the other end. How is it that I can send my picture and thoughts so that they will be received by a certain group of people? I send them to Time Stream from where I am. For the Time Stream group, there is a way to transfer these things to Earth. There's more than one way. So for my part, I tune into the energy of Time Streamer. I know how to do it and I get the job done. Mark, when you were in the Time Stream sending station, located in the astral planes, who were you working with? Jeanette, you understand that there are technicians and people who are here. When a person wants to send some thoughts or a picture or whatever, you just send yourself through what you would think of as thought or desire. Let's call it desire to create this thing, and you know how to do it, in the same way that you would go to the telephone and you have to know a certain number to reach a certain person. I do a similar thing here, and I'm working with whoever is working at Time Stream at the moment of transmission. The Time Stream sending station is not what you would think of as a place. It is a vibration that one can touch. Mark, were you involved in materializing the actual picture of you that was sent? Jeanette, I posed, you might say, but it would not be with a camera. It would be energy transmission. Mark, is Nancy Carroll still spending time or sharing efforts with you? Jeanette, not so much as in the beginning. She has developed in other directions, and she comes and goes, as grown-up children do in Earth life. Mark, what is she doing now? Jeanette, she's working on some projects with some friends of hers. She's been working, believe it or not, with the soul of a little dog. And she's been doing some projects like what you'd call cooking up some things. She's been working on a personal energy connection with another soul. She TMS doing some work with water. She's also been deciding whether she'd like to reincarnate to Earth. Mark, oh. Is she leaning in that direction? Jeanette. The thought comes and goes. She was thinking of living near the ocean. Mark, don't you have a lot of oceans where you are? Jeanette, we have everything you could imagine. It's just unlimited, whatever you want to experience. But yes, she's been thinking about reincarnation again on Earth. Pause, I understand what you're asking. It is that this soul who was my daughter on Earth is a vast entity that is so far beyond in her understanding, beyond the portion of her soul that occupied that tiny infant body. I not only see that part and can communicate that part with George, but I can perceive and interact with the total soul. We need not limit each other to where we have to spend vast amounts of time together as a mother and daughter on Earth might do. Do you understand? Mark, yes. In fact, I was wondering, when you crossed over initially and met Nancy Carroll as an infant, I wonder if she was an infant at that time because you wanted her to be, and then she grew up quickly. Jeanette, her being an infant was a means of recognition. It's not like on Earth where it takes time for a person to evolve from infancy to adulthood. Here it can be experienced at any moment. Any memory a soul contains can be relived. So it was just a means of memory connection, of recognition, that she connected with me as my infant daughter. Mark, do many situations occur in which a person crosses over and they feel so uncomfortable and out of place that things are made to accommodate them, to make them feel more comfortable? Jeanette, the newcomers make those accommodations for themselves, sometimes with assistance from friends. There is an order to heaven. and there is an order to the memory and to the reconnecting with the higher vibrations to make things comfortable, or familiar, for ourselves. So at any moment I could have touched in with Nancy Carroll's energy as the infant I remembered, and at any moment decided which part of her soul I would interact with in the next moment. Mark, are you on what George would call the celestial plane, or do you even consider that sort of terminology? Jeanette, oh, we do. Yes. Various beings define it in different ways. I am able to travel as far as my frequency has developed. In your understanding, I could come and go even to the ascended master level, what George calls the celestial plane. But I do not stay in that frequency for long periods of time. Mark, where do you feel most comfortable? Jeanette, what you would call a home space, what you would call a frequency of love, the understanding of love and oneness. Mark, one hope I can meet you eventually in a manner in which I can see or feel your energy as well. Jeanette, yes, well, if you get on with this writing. Mark, automatic writing, you're referring to? Jeanette, we're talking about telepathic communication. Mark, that is certainly my aim. Do you have any tips? The channel, Jean, has loaned me a copy of The Dynamics of Cosmic Telepathy, by Tueller. Any other ideas? Jeanette, create a small amount of time regularly, once a week or once a day, when you can do your meditation to align yourself, state your desire, and write. The book by Tueller will help. Now, as we've said, there are no magic wands, so when you wish to develop this telepathy, you put in some physical energy because you are on a physical plane. And the recognition, the higher frequency energy, comes through the physical. So when that is aligned, when the desire is stated, and when the will to produce emerges, the recognition of it will come. One, along with others, will work with you as we work with George and others. Anyway, you do some channeled writing frequently, you just may not be aware of it. Mark, thank you. Since we are still in contact, when I work with Georgia, this is something that is important to me right now. How do you view my work with George? Do you see it evolving in a positive way? Jeanette, yes, through the contacts you are being led forward and through your own desire for service in your own way. You will produce works that will be of assistance in raising consciousness through your writing, through one-on-one, group communication, film, and through your teaching skills. That contact with George is leading to more and more energy connections around the planet. From our perspective, the foundation of George's work has its own solid structure, but you will take that foundation and build your own building, so to speak, and create your own destiny. That foundation will be a springboard to the continuation of George's work, but at the same time the building is your own creation. What we attempt to do from these levels, while tying the dimensions together, is to have a continuing work with Earth. And, so, just as a father in your dimension hopefully passes on a family business to a son, George's hopes and ours, too, is that this foundation will continue with the structure which you have built upon it. How those energies tie together and continue is a beautiful thing to see from our level. We would encourage you to continue with your own building. Mark, I appreciate that very much. Jeanette, so the apple, then, has seeds. The person eats the apple, enjoys it and throws the core to the earth, and it's entirely possible that an entire tree can spring up from what some would consider waste or litter. So it is with George's work and how you would take those seeds and grow an even greater abundance than George has been able to do in his time. Mark, there seems to be a lot of fertile soil for it to take root now, the way the world is today. Jeanette, that's right, it's timing that allows a tree to grow. About 6 months after our dialogue with Jeanette, I, Mark, was part of one of the first planned telephone communications with Time Stream to the United States. I received a telephone call on January 21, 1994, from Dr. Konstantin Rodive. It was so unexpected, I was not prepared with a tape recorder. Konstantin said this contact was a historic moment. You can imagine how frustrated I was, not to be able to record that historic conversation. However, Konstantin also called George Meek, and George was prepared. The date was January 27, 1994, when the phone rang. George felt the flare of excitement when he realized it was Konstantin Rodive. He was intimately familiar with the work of electronic voice pioneer Dr. Rodive, who had died in 1974. Ordinarily George might have been a bit suspicious, but I had called him a week earlier and told him of my phone contact with Rodive. What he then heard was to be the first taped telephone conversation from the astral plane to the United States. George: hello, this is George Meek. Rodive, in a very deep voice, speaking slowly, carefully, with hints of a Northern European accent: this is Konstantin Rodive. George: my friend, at last we have succeeded in contacting you. Jeanette is beside me, and she wants to give you all her love. I suppose that you can hear me. George: I can hear you very well, very plainly. Rodive: fine, so this is the first contact you get from us. This is the beginning of a new story, a new chapter, George. You are a very good friend of ours, even if we haven't met. This is the first bridge we have succeeded in building to the States. Mark was contacted, and I must interrupt now. This is Konstantin Rodive. Since his death in 1974, Konstantin Rodive has been helping his colleagues on Earth to make ITC a success. He says it is his calling. It appears to be the calling of George and Jeanette Meek as well. Jeanette is already keeping in close touch with Time Stream and with her husband during his final years on Earth. George is looking forward to his coming reunion with Jeanette and the projects he can do once he is young again, with boundless energy. George says he is eager to do what he can to open up communication between two worlds. 4. The third plane. What IT's like to live in a new dimension. From 1986 to 1993, 50 different male and female voices have spoken through the technical equipment at Luxembourg. All of them described landscapes on the third, mid-astral, plane that reminded them of Earth. Fog, night, rivers, lakes, stars, mountains and polar caps are all part of the landscape. Any type of house the mind can imagine is here: houses with thatched roofs, magnificent palaces with glass towers and roofs of gold. One man, a vine grower, joyfully remarked that he had a vineyard in the spirit world and that his grapes were more beautiful than he'd ever seen. Other spirits spoke of rivers and mountains that reminded them of Earth, but couldn't fit them into any particular Earth locale. Most of them said they were aware they had passed over to this new locale, but they couldn't remember how they'd gotten here. The here is the planet Marduk, not in the Earth's solar system. It has three suns. The planet orbits one sun and is illuminated by the other two. It is never totally dark. The circumference of Marduk is approximately 127,000 kilometers. Marduk has a moon larger than Earth's moon. A single large river, the River of Eternity, flows across the entire planet. The deepest part of the river is 17,000 kilometers and the widest spot is 3,700 kilometers. Scattered along this river are 60 billion people. The landscape is not continually shifting and changing. There are certain constants. Cities exist, as do schools and universities. Today, such descriptions of the astral planes are not uncommon, as countless people have near-death experiences, NDEs, and out-of-body experiences, OBEs, and report them either in private to family and close friends, or publicly through articles, books and lectures. Robert Monroe, former TV executive and now director of the Monroe Institute of Applied Science in Virginia, has had innumerable out-of-body trips and he claims that he is at present mapping the astral plane. He says that he has trained 50 students to astral project as a group to given points on the astral plane. Monroe, a pioneer in astral travel, has written several books on astral projection and is internationally known for his work on the effects of sound waveforms on human behavior. Many of his students, highly respected engineers, physicists, doctors, teachers, psychiatrists and social service workers, come to Virginia to study out-of-body techniques. Swedgen Salter, director of Time Stream, describes the River of Eternity as the astral plane's main topographical feature and says it winds like a snake around the entire planet of Marduk and that it seems to be fed by tributaries which originate in the surrounding mountains. She says there appears to be a different kind of physics here. A river of this kind is impossible from a physics perspective on Earth. That is, the existence of a single river which encircles the entire planet. The ground has no layers here, as on Earth, and there seems to be no water seepage. Whole communities are clumped along the river, communities of people who lived many years ago, such as the ancient Vikings and people of the Stone Age. They wear the same clothes they wore then. A history buff has the opportunity to study different periods of history and to talk to the people who lived during those periods. In fact, a deceased French scientist named Rimbaud is living with people of the early Stone Age to study their habits. Along the river, too, are communities of people where everyone is of a particular religion, particular nationality, or had the same cultural or sports interests. Catholics, Protestants and those of other faiths may remain segregated, secure in their particular beliefs. However, as people live on this plane, feelings of divisiveness between the various groups begin to fade. They begin to feel at home with others of all races and beliefs. Life is safe and secure here, free of any misery and suffering. And some people have lived here for hundreds of years without reincarnating. But gradually, each person becomes aware of the things he did not finish or learn on Earth, and the time comes when a person wants to progress, to learn new things. Then it is time to make a reality change, or what we call reincarnate. For whatever one did not learn on Earth, whatever life lessons one evaded, those things will hold one back from progressing to higher planes of existence. The point is that one can create many mental constructs and play with ideas on the astral plane. But actually living on Earth is putting one's ideas into nitty-gritty practice. Life is the acid test of what a person really believes in. For example, here on Earth, Mother Teresa is not simply visualizing taking care of the sick. She is taking care of the sick in a physically demanding situation and she is using her life energy to do it. One of the purposes of the astral plane is to wean humans away from patriotism and nationalism. On the higher planes there is a universal understanding. There is no separation by time, space or dimension. Each soul is part of the whole. Time Estreme gives an analogy of a crystal to illustrate the point. Assume all positive and negative thoughts, intentions and actions could come together and form a huge crystal. On the outside, the crystal could be surrounded by rough stone, but on the inside it would glow in the most beautiful colors and its center would contain our souls. The illumination of this great soul would penetrate, step by step, the irregularities of its rough surrounding. The beauty of the crystal would become more visible every day. Now realize that the core of this shiny crystal contains the spiritual potential of all of us, including those of different eras of time and of different origin. New arrivals in spirit often join the nationality group closest to the roots of their origin and they receive the living quarters they ask for, although some join already established spirit families. In general, one turns toward those groups that share one's interest. So there are communities of artists and musicians as well. A first encounter with third plane inhabitants may be with people from past time history or with an intelligent being who looks entirely different than we do on Earth. The ability to be flexible and to accept the new and unusual leads one toward progressively new dimensions. Death is a great adventure. The newly deceased, after a short rest period of a few days or weeks, may decide to travel on the third plane and see the sights. Or they may be very happy to be reunited with old friends and relatives on the astral plane. They may even meet relatives they never really got to know on Earth. After death, the entire memory of the individual's past lives is restored and he or she may even seek out friends and relatives of a former past life shared in some long ago past time. As spirit researcher Friedrich G. Jensen said in a computer contact in 1992, beings keep their individuality during reality changes with their consciousness and reincarnations. The new world is a world of discovery. Sometimes, These meetings with friends and relatives are exciting, or sometimes one realizes that there is nothing in common at all, and so one moves on to develop new relationships.